This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz. This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. You're in Aussie Bay, and on the weekend we had the Aussie tournament, the Gold Coast Congress. How did you manage to sway the books to be in Aussie Bay?
Haven't you heard about the all-expenses-paid tour from New Zealand Bridge for the people that work on the Bridge Zone? Or was it just me?
It's just you. I never got that email. It's way past my pay grade.
If anybody's wondering, it's not.
You actually got a convoy of vans. I thought there was only going to be two.
We've got three at the moment. We had four yesterday.
Wow. You got rid of one.
They're at Kaikoura.
How cool is that? Travelling in a convoy. You're going to have to send us a picture.
Okay, we got a Millington family photo of Jenny's family at Nelson Square in Picton yesterday.
Cool.
Going on to the Aussie tournaments, Gold Coast Online, they had the Matchpoint Swiss Pairs on Saturday. Kiwis in contention. The winners were John Yang and Dee Harley, who aren't Kiwis. Third were Jeff Miller and Pam Livingston.
Cool.
And also making the top 10 were John Wang and Yuzhong Chen, who snuck into ninth. There were lots of others in a field of 146. Making the top 10 is pretty good. Then on the Sunday, we moved on to the Gold Coast Online Crossimp Pairs. Yuzhong and John continued their good form and got even better and won that one. So well done to John Wang and Yuzhong Chen.
Good on you, Yuzhong and John.
They won in a field of 154.
How many rounds was that?
9 matches. Oh, there were 2 Kiwis snuck into the top 10. Mindy Wu, playing with Kim Fraser, came 6th. And Steve Barron, playing with Jimmy Wallace, came 9th. We still count Tania Lloyd as a Kiwi. She was an ex-Kiwi, yeah. Came in 4th. I wonder how much money John and Yuzhong would get for winning the Crossimp Pairs. Or am I not meant to mention that word?
Oh, no. We'll be able to find out.
The restricted pairs at Orewa.
Which was taken out by Grant Jarvis and Alex Meyer.
Would you call that opposite ends of the spectrum, or would that be rude?
What, a senior and an intermediate player?
I was thinking more of age than...
Oh.
Grant's probably listening to this, so we better be careful.
Well done. Grant does have a good history of playing with the youth players, doesn't he? Likes arranging games with them. He's played with the majority of the ones that are currently on the circuit. So well done to Grant and Alex. And FYI, people, we actually have a chat with Alex Meyer, with Ross Longney. So you'll be able to hear a bit about that and what her goals are, if she's got any for 26, and how's her form, Barry. Her form is being incredible because she went over to Canberra, of course, managed to pick up something like 21 A points, Barry. Hey, and a shout out. G'day, Alina Karen. Gave us some feedback, something for Judge Julie and the bailiff to sink their teeth into.
I was not quite sure where Alina comes from. Maybe she'll send us an email and tell us what part of the world she's from, but it doesn't seem to be New Zealand.
Ifayakine. Coming up next, it's time for the Gin Club. That's juniors, intermediates and novices, and our man on the spot, Mr. Gin himself, it's Ross Longney.
I said to Jack a diamond, he told the queen of spades, he said, now, stop down, baby, stop your cheating ways. And the Jack a diamond, he told
we have a special guest with us today.
My full name is Alexandria Meyer. Really, the only time my full name is ever used is when I am in a lot of trouble with my parents. So I usually just ask for people to call me Alex.
How cool. Well, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, Alex, it's great to have you on the Bridge Zone this week because we want to talk to you a little bit about yourself and about what you've done in the last year or so. Because at the moment, you are our most highly achieving gin player in New Zealand. And in the last 6 months, I can tell you, if you don't already know, that you have actually achieved 50 master points within the last 6 weeks. This puts you ahead of even the great Blair Fisher at the moment in terms of master points. And in those master points, we include nearly 25 A point. So, Alex, congratulations on that wonderful achievement at this stage. Can you just tell us a little bit about yourself? You come from the East Coast Bays Bridge Club, which is also coincidentally famous for starting the bridge career of the great Michael Weir. Tell me, how did you learn bridge? Where did you start playing? Please.
Thanks, Ross. I sort of stumbled across bridge somewhat by accident. I played it a little bit, not proper bridge, more like 500 during school. And then I got bored during COVID and decided to do bridge lessons with Mary Chamberlain over in Mount Albert.
Cool.
Although I ended up getting quite busy with university, so I dropped that. That was around about 2021. Then in 2024, when I started working full time, I went to go play with Mackenzie, who, you know, is my main partner at East Coast Bays, just to have some fun. He knew that I played bridge. I don't think he knew how much of a beginner I was, though. So I think he got a bit of a shock. He was absolutely amazing.
We have a lot to thank Mary Chamberlain for, of course. How did you get to know Mackenzie Rhodes?
Well, we've been friends since about 2020, just through university. I didn't know he played bridge until we ended up mentioning it while playing whist.
Okay.
And so I mentioned, oh yeah, I know about this. And he was, of course, quite surprised because there's not many youth players. And so he suggested that we play together sometime.
Fantastic. You make a nice partnership together. You have some very interesting systems and very interesting bids that you're developing. Interesting to play against you too, but very much a pleasure. Beyond Mackenzie Rhodes, who are your mentors or guides and partners at the bridge table?
Again, I haven't been playing very long, but I'm quite fortunate to have quite a few people who have picked me up. Last year, when I accidentally qualified for the interprovincial team with Freddie, Grant noticed that I hadn't been doing any tournaments. So he came up to me and said, I noticed that you haven't been doing any tournaments. Want to do one with me? And of course, I was absolutely stoked because he is a crazy good player. And I'd only been playing about 8 months at this point. Of course, I said yes. He was my first big mentor other than Helen. Helen is from East Coast Bays and has taught me so much about bridge. She's the one who taught me stamen, transfers, all of the basics about playing a no trump in the suited contract. So he played with me a couple of times during 2025. And then after Congress, I managed to get a very, very large list of people who have, even if they haven't played with me, have been helping me out quite a bit. I've got Kevin who I'm playing with quite regularly. He's already taught me so much and is an amazing player to play with. Lissandra, I haven't played with yet, but she's helped me quite a bit with Alex and I's system over Congress, the symmetric relay, or at least the intermediate version of it that we were playing. And then I've got Jack and Helen, who I've also played with quite regularly.
Well, you're very fortunate to have such great people backing you, and that backing is certainly justified, Alex. And we're talking, of course, about Grant Jarvis, with whom you have just yesterday won the Orewa Restricted Tournament with, and that was a great result. We're also harking back to last year when you did very, very well at Congress, playing mostly with Alex Shan. And the Freddie that you mentioned is Freddie Chan, with whom you played in the Interprovincials. These are big events that you're playing in. And how do you go about, just for our gin club members, preparing for these big events and tournaments? And how do you feel after these tournaments?
Probably not the best person to talk to on this. In general, I get extremely stressed before any big event and tend to like just avoid thinking about it until it's there.
Good to hear.
I also don't particularly like looking at the results. I can usually get a good feel of how I've done. Even if we get like 66 or 70%, I can often feel like I could have played better. So I just like clearing up from my head during the tournament. Even afterwards, just going, sitting down, chilling, and then after I've chilled, I will go and look at the results later, see where I can improve.
Just in January, you spent over 2 weeks in Australia. So what was that event and who did you play with?
So that was actually comprised of two events. The first one was the Australian Youth Week. I was very, very fortunate to be able to play that with Tamati, who is an extremely good youth player. I think he just moved from intermediate to open this year. And I also got to play with Jesse Pelinatoi, who is an extremely good player from Christchurch.
So when you're chopping and changing with your partnerships, what basic system are you playing?
The way my mind works is sort of like files in a record cabinet. I tend to store the systems which I'm using in a record, and I can pull them out when I need to use them. And in general, it's just like a short discussion. It was mostly 2-over-1, which is the main system played among Youth Bridge in both New Zealand and Australia. I also got to play with Ellie. She's a player from Wellington who is super talented. It is incredible. She's been playing about as long as I have, and she's another big up-and-coming player. I think she plays with Peter Newell quite a bit, and right. I was very, very lucky to play with her in the individual, and it was so entertaining.
Oh, yeah. Cool. So at that event, how many youth attended?
About 50, but there were only 8 from New Zealand.
Okay.
New Zealand did very well over there, Alex, didn't they?
Yeah, although I do believe part of that is the Australian qualification for like the Australian youth team was going on at the same time. So all of the good Australian players had qualified for this event and were playing in this event. And then they ran the New Zealand versus Australia during the same time. So it's like all of these players from New Zealand, all of which almost every New Zealand player would have qualified for the Australian qualification round.
Join us next week as we continue to chat with Alex Meyer from East Coast Bays Club, part of the next generation of youth in New Zealand. Diamond, he told the Queen of Spades. E haere mai ana, tia ti Julie. Coming up, it's Judge Julie.
Hear ye, the court's in session, the court's in session. Now here come the judge, here come the
Good morning, Judge Julie.
Hi.
Welcome everybody to the courthouse, and we have our gin man in the seat, I guess.
I'm in Okiwi Bay. I'm not in the pew at the courthouse like Ross.
Pews are in churches.
I think I'm in the dock, actually, Barry.
Yeah, that'd be in the dock. Yeah.
First up, we are just going to clarify some feedback that we got from last week's question about hesitation.
This was to do with card play. And because I was focusing on a different area of it, like in the middle of the play, I didn't actually think about trick one. Really importantly is that at trick one, you take time to make the opening lead. You make it face down, just in case it's not your lead, or more importantly, if the opponents have forgotten to alert something and there's some information that should have been given to you before you made the opening lead. So if you make the opening lead face down, first off, you can't retract it unless the director allows it. Secondly, if someone hasn't alerted and should have alerted or has given the wrong explanation, dummy or declarer will tell you that there's information you should have, which might change what lead you make. After that, you face the opening lead when everyone's happy, and dummy goes down. At this point, both the third in hand player, the opponent who hasn't played, and declarer will be wanting to take time to think. And you should be taking time to consider what you will do and a lot about the hand at that point, and it's your time to be able to do that, and that is trick one. Now, because you have this thing about not hesitating with a singleton when you're playing to a trick, sometimes I put my whole hand down flat on the table. I never, ever put the card I'm going to play face down on the table. I'm not too sure the person that wrote in and reminded me about this said about that. I've never seen that. I have put my entire hand face down on the table while I stop to have a look and think about what's going on. The other thing is to say I'm just thinking, not so that people are aware that it's not about whether you've got a singleton or not. And you should be consistent about the way you do this. Because if you do it differently every time, of course, your partner's going to get some information from the fact that what you're doing is different to what you did previously. Trick one is a time for everyone at the table, except possibly dummy, to take some time to think about their defence, or their players to clearer. And any time you take there will be caught up later in the hand because you will be prepared for what happens next. Thank you, Alina, for bringing it to our attention.
I've never put my whole hand down on the table, but I have put the card I'm going to play face down. But as you all know, I never usually think that long.
Just on that bit, we were talking about singletons. Sometimes dummy actually has a singleton in the suit that's led. Yep. And dummy actually puts a card down and then pulls the card, as if it's being played.
No card is played from dummy until declarer nominates it.
I think dummies sometimes think they're being helpful when they pull it because it's a singleton, so they're going to play.
I don't like my partners playing a card from dummy without me having called it because I like to stop and think about the hand in total, and moving a card around is really disconcerting. It's like rearranging dummy partway through the hand. I know where the cards are and I can see them. Rearranging them disrupts the thought process and is disruptive.
Yep.
Pet hates, and I'm pretty certain the next question is going to bring up one of mine.
Okay.
Oh, I can hardly wait. Hope it's nothing to do with teammates.
Got this text from one of our gin members, Catherine, who's asked, should stamen be alerted if a partnership is playing what she calls a garbage stamen?
All right. Interestingly enough, what is garbage stamen is probably the first thing. Garbage stamen is when you have got 0+ points and it is still stamen if you have a four-card major. At least one four-card major. You may be intending to pass whatever partner does next. So triple four ones with a singleton club, because you can pass whatever partner's response is. 5-4 in the majors, partner bids 2 diamonds, you bid your longest major, and that says shut up. It's a detour on the way to where you want to be. Instead of transferring, it gives you a better chance to play in a better spot. Now, garbage stamen as such is not alertable if you're promising at least one four-card major. But any stamen is alertable if it's not stamen. That is, if it doesn't contain or promise to contain at least one four-card major. So if you're playing four-way transfers, which a lot of people do now, and you bid 2 clubs on 4-3-3 hands, where you've got an invitational hand but no four-card major, so you go through 2 clubs and then after partner responds, you bid 2 no-trumps, that 2-club bid is alertable because it does not promise at least one 4-card or longer major. So nothing to do with garbage, nothing to do with point count, all to do with the shape. So a 2-club bid that in response to 1 no-trump that does not promise at least one 4-card or longer major is alertable. Now, that may differ between New Zealand and Australia. I'm not certain about the Australian regs here, and I do know they used to have to alert the stamen anyway. I don't think they do now, but the states in Australia, I'm not certain of all the regulations around that. So if you've got any Aussie listeners, I would have to check the Australian regulations.
That sounds good. If you're playing super accept, there's no variation on what you've said?
You don't have super accepts with stamen unless you're promising at least 11+ points. Any bit of information that you get from your partner's bidding that your opponents may not get often makes a bid alertable. So if I transfer and you super accept on all 4-card support hands or all good 4-card support hands, there is information about your response that may need to be alerted because you're defining the strength of your hand, not just the shape. But that's another question in itself. That's a wee bit more complex.
Well, I hope that's of a help to Catherine and to all our gin members. Thank you, Julie.
Okay, thanks, Ross.
Julie, what about the 2 diamond response? Is that ever relatable?
If it's standard, I don't have a 4-card. Absolutely not. It's just saying I don't have a 4-card major. All of those things, there are some variations. And the rule of thumb, it used to be that you alerted bids you didn't expect your opponents to understand. We can't have a list of alertable bids, because there are so many variations of what is and isn't that it really is up to individuals. If you are in doubt, either ask the director, or if you alert it, you're probably not going to be in trouble for alerting something that may not need alerting. You will get into trouble sooner or later if you alert everything when it doesn't need alerting, but that's another thing as well.
So our Aussie listeners, can you let us know if you have to alert your stamen bids over a 1-no-trump?
the states differ and the ABF differ sometimes in what's as a sponsor.
Aren't we lucky we only have one organisation to guide us? So that's bridgezoneshuffle@gmail.com. Okay, Judgy, thank you very much for that.
Okay, have a good week, everyone.
The gambler's up next, tipping his hat. You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away. So the 10 mental checks that we were talking about before you made a bid were: is your hand balanced or unbalanced? Who is vulnerable? What did your partner bid last? Do you have a stopper in the opponent's suit? Count your losers, not your points. Are you in first, second, third, or fourth seat? Did your bid describe shape or strength? Is there a better defensive bid? Risk versus reward, is it worth it? And the number 10 is breathe, don't rush. Now, prior to that, they were saying a bridge expert go through that list in less than 5 seconds. What do you think about that?
I reckon yes and no.
Why are you on the fence?
I think that the bridge expert probably does think about all those things, but they don't consciously go through a list of 10 things. I think it's probably comes reasonably naturally after you've been playing for a long time
at a
decent level. You do consider all those things, but you wouldn't actually consciously go through and tick off all 10 items.
Now, the one I'm interested in is, are you in first, second, third, or fourth seat? Why would it make a difference?
All the difference.
Why?
Well, in first chair, you probably bid relatively normally, and that if you've got an opening hand, you're open. But we do have a bit of a look at the vulnerability, and if you're thinking of opening a bit light, you might be not quite so inclined to do it if you're in first chair. If you're vulnerable and you're thinking about opening four spades or something, you might think, maybe not. You're probably playing relatively normal in first chair.
Okay. So does that include preemptive bids? Like if you've got a weak two hearts, you should open it.
Yeah, you would. You'd like to have a reasonable suit, but in first chair, you might decide to risk it with a not such a good suit. Other chairs, you might not.
Okay. Second seat?
Second seat is Mr. Solid Citizen. This is where you're in second chair. The person on your right has already passed, so the opponents have already started passing information to each other, and that the hand on your left knows their partner hasn't got an opening hand. So unless they've got a really good hand, they know they don't have to push the boat out too much. So in second chair, you're Mr. Solid Citizen or Mrs. Solid Citizen or Miss Solid Citizen. And you will always have your bid. If you open a week two, you've probably got a decent suit. If you open the bidding, you're going to have a normal opening hand.
Yeah.
Second chair, there is not so much advantage in getting frisky.
Okay. Third seat?
My favourite seat.
Is it? Why is that?
Wow. Partner's already passed. The world's your oyster.
This
is probably the frisky seat. Yes, if you open the bidding and partner bids something, it's not forcing anymore. If you open the bidding one diamond and partner bid one spade and they're a passed hand, you can pass if you like. Not everybody might agree with me on this. I believe that in third chair there's a lot more that you can get away with. You're not forced to take another bid. You can try something in third chair. And if you're green against red particularly, I think you'll find that some of the top players do some awful things third and chair. But this is a family show, and I'm not going to talk about what they might be. People do some pretty horrible things in third chair. By the way, if you're playing against a good player and they open third and chair and they're not Vull and you are, just look at that. Third chair, not Vull against Vull. You might be about to get robbed blind.
Oh.
If they're going to psych, or they're going to open really, really light, or they're going to open a week two with not as many cards in the suit, this is probably the time they're going to do it.
I've never really paid much attention, but maybe I have to now.
Maybe you should. Or maybe when you get to third chair, you might think about becoming some sort of a lunatic.
Oh, I don't need any help there, Barry.
I was going to say, some people would say that's not a very big step for you to take, Mariana.
Yeah, I know. What's an advantage in fourth seat?
So fourth seat, look, a lot of it is just all about the spade suit, isn't it? Because if you're in fourth seat and you've just got a sort of an average sort of a minimum opening hand, it all becomes about the spade suit. And that's why we've talked about in the past about these Pearson points.
Yeah.
You remember about Pearson points? The
no.
Pearson points. Okay. Pearson points are the number of high card points you have. So you count those up and then you add those to the number of spades that you've got.
Yeah.
And if it comes to 15 or more, you open the bidding. If it comes to less than 15, destiny is in your own hands. You can decide to pass this hand in and take a zero. Now, people will be thinking zero is not a good score, but zero can be a hero if they're all getting 110 the other way or 140 the other way or 90 or whatever they get. If you open the bidding and the opponents outbid you in spades and they make their contract, you're going to go minus. Zero is a way better score than going minus.
Oh, there's too much to think about being in what seat you are. I think I like the sound of a solid citizen.
So you always want to be in the second chair?
Yeah.
I tell you what, next week we'll talk about what you do when you're in fifth chair.
Is that when the director comes along with their ruler?
That's Judge Julie's chair.
Yeah. So I guess number 9, it was risk versus reward. Is it worth it? You need to think about what seat you're in, red versus green.
You do. So you're red versus green and what seat you're in. So if you're in second chair, a preempt is nowhere near as good as if you're in first chair or maybe even third chair, but certainly in second chair where they've already started to pass information to each other, even if it's just via a pass, it's not as much reward. And I tell you what, when you're just looking at that minus 1400 on the bridge of eight, where you've just got doubled in three arts and gone down for some horrible number, you're thinking to yourself, nah, it wasn't worth it, and it's too late then. You reckon I've given my share of tips this week? It is just when you're about to bid, think what chair you're sitting in.
Yeah, I think that's a great one.
Is it a lazy boy? or is it one of those hard wooden kitchen chairs?
Yeah, or a three-legged stool.
Yeah.
Whoa, here he comes again. That's the thing. Who's that with me? Ethel? Is that you, Ethel? Where do you think you're going? I'm kissing at me.
That's about it for this week, folks. And as always, we'll see you at the table.
Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring bridge from beginner to international nationwide. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.